We're going to tell stories to celebrate ourselves and some other parts of life. And to illustrate this, I am going to let my friend the onion tell the first story. This onion is about to perform a very courageous and generous act. This onion is going to reveal itself to us. And we are going to respect it. That is to say, we are not going to use it, which we normally do, or worship it, which we've never done, but we might. So first of all, let's just very carefully peel this onion. Notice the skin. I'll pass around a piece of it. You can look at it more carefully. It's too bad the light in here is so bad, because the skin is particularly beautiful in strong light. I'm going to just take off the little curly top. Now, this onion is a bit older than some onions which I have gotten to know this way. But that doesn't mean that it isn't beautiful. It's just as beautiful. It's just going to be a little different. It means that some of the papery, dry skin is a little wet. And here, you can see there's a little greenness on it. Now hear that. It's tearing just like paper. Can you hear that? A crackling, almost like a fire. And as I peel it, it has a nice crispness to it. The inside is smooth and a little shiny. And it isn't all the same color either. There. Now that's the first layer. And you can see how light and kind of leaf-like it is. Now the first layer's off, and you can see the globe, and it's very smooth. It has a little wetness to it. This is a difficult part. I'm going to cut it in half. Do they call this tough love? And it's particularly difficult to do with this paring knife, but, you know. Now this is interesting. This onion has a dark side to it.
Dark side of the forest.
Yes, quite dark, as you could see here. This part is aged beyond beyond repair. However, it does mark the design well, doesn't it? You can see better the places where the bulb is coming out.
Now I'm. You can have a happy day.
Oh, yes, look at this, a smiling face.
It is everything.
Good. Good idea. I'm going to squeeze it. Let's see what happens when I squeeze it. Oh, yes, here it comes. Just a little bit more. Oh, it's so wet. Oh, it's very wet. Ah, now the aroma of the onions is beginning to come out. Isn't it wonderful? And here, as we get toward the center, it's easier to find these marvelous little pieces of membrane that are transparent, like this one. just come out, this very special, sort of innocent transparency in the centers. Look at that. Reminds me a little bit of the egg inside the eggshell, that little, remember that in prison camp that membrane was treasured on eggs. They used to take it off because it has special kind of curative vitamin or something in it that is good for certain kinds of diseases. So they give that to the hospital so they could use it. This curls kind of interestingly too, sort of like a petal. Well, let's see what else we have here. Aha. Now, we're getting down to this side of it, and I'm going to... See, normally I don't take this much time when I prepare an onion, but occasionally I like to do this because an onion, like anything, has a lot of secrets. Things really aren't what they seem to be. As you may notice, we started off with a rather dry old vegetable. Now we're getting down to the center, and we're finding something rather young and very green. Look. What does this look like anyway? Take off its veil and see if we can see it a little bit there. And I'm going to display this when we're through, when the onion story is over, so that all of you can fondle it. You can arrange it in different patterns. You can look at it for yourself and really get to know it. Because there are so many ways stories can be told. And really, there isn't a bad way to tell a story that I've found yet. But to celebrate an onion, well, that's really wonderful. Here, I just took off that little hard knob. Did you hear that? Didn't that sound good? It sort of popped. Remember when you were kids, there's that white berry that grows on bushes. You can't eat it, but if you put it on the cement and step on it, it pops like a little pop gun or a little firecracker. And that's what this little onion's doing. Now I'm going to see if I can carve an opening inside of this and see what happens. This is quite tight here, really tight. A lot tighter than some of them. This onion has got a lot of character. It really does. But you know, it had to come a long way to get here. Think about it. It didn't grow here. And one woman who met an onion this way told me afterwards, you know, onions and oranges are unique because they carry their own packing cases with them. So they travel very well. Now you see, you have your inner and outer space. Now what's more important? What says more to you? And here we have flames within flames within flames, tongues of fire inside of this wet onion.
To me it looks more like a teardrop.
Aha! Well, it does have that quality to it too. Look at that. I test too. Now, this time, let's see what happens if I cut it this way. Now you get the ribbon, the famous onion layer that we're all so familiar with, that we see in the newspapers when they make pictures of onions. They often show them this way. And this, of course, has been used often as an illustration for the personality, starting, I think, with Peer Gynt, Ibsen's Peer Gynt, and so on. But frankly, I think it's doing the onion an injustice to compare it to anything but itself, don't you? The beautiful kind of layering. Again, oh, it's fun to touch this because there's so many different textures in here. Well, I'll leave that there. Have you heard the story of the woman who was saved by an onion? Have you heard that? Well, this took place in a town, a small town in Russia, I think. And the woman, everybody hated her. She was a crab. She was just awful. She was a real curmudgeon. Nobody wanted to talk to her. Nobody wanted to go near her. But one day, a bum from up of town wandered up to her door unknowingly, didn't know she was the curmudgeon of the town, and knocked on the door. And she came to the door. He said, "Lady, could I have a bite to eat and maybe a little money?" She said, "Eat? Huh. You better get out of here, Buster, and don't come back." So he said, okay, I'm leaving. And he walks out down the path and starts walking down, and she picks up an onion that she had nearby and heaves it at him. And he turned around and caught it. Now, the woman died, as of course all of us must sometime. She was going down to hell. When she looked up, and there just above her, floating in space, was an onion. So she grabbed onto it, and it took her right to heaven. She was saved by that onion. Well, since this onion has been willing to reveal a little bit of itself to us, I think we can reveal a little bit of ourselves to each other also this evening. And so I want us to tell some stories, and the stories I'd like to hear are the stories you want us to hear. I was talking with somebody today about telling stories, and this person said, "I don't think I have anything to say that's interesting." I said, "Is that right? You mean you're not interested in anything?" He said, "No, that's not true. It's just that anything I say isn't going to be interesting to anyone else." I said, "Only if you're not interested in it. I don't care what it's about. As long as you pay as much attention to it as we just paid to this onion, it's bound to be interesting. Right?" Now, before we start, I'd like to let us loosen up a little bit with one warming up game. And there's been quite a bit of talk in the village off and on about how we need to share feelings. And certainly when you're celebrating, you share feelings. But also, when you're dealing with stories, feelings are one of the choices you make to express what's happening in the story. And you can show a lot of feeling, some feeling, or no feeling. The story can be good in either one of those modes. However, it's much more interesting if you choose to show maybe a lot of feeling sometimes, some feeling another time, and no feeling another time. So we're going to pass this pen around, and we're going to play this game, which is called, this is a pen. Okay? Can you give it back to me and say, this is a what? This is a what? Say.
This is a
what?
A what?
This is a pen. Right, the first thing we're doing is no feelings. We're just doing neutral. And he's going to pass it to him and say the same thing. This is a pen. And then you pass it back and say, this is a what?
This is a what?
This is a pen.
Now really give it to him. Really give it to him. Good. We want to be very clear that we're actually giving something and taking it. So if you have to exaggerate it, that's fine. Go ahead, pass it to her.
This is a pen.
What?
Say the whole thing. This is a what?
This is a what?
Really give it back.
This
uh-huh.
is a pen.
Good. Really giving and taking. Giving and taking. And go all the way with it. Really give it to him.
This is a pen.
This is a what?
And give it back to her. Good. And then give it to him. Good. This is a give and take, a complete exchange where you just really give it.
This is really a pen.
That's it.
This is a pen.
This is a what?
This is a pen.
This is a pen.
This is a what?
This is a pen.
This is a pen. This is a what?
This is a pen.
This is a pen. This is a what? This is a pen. This is a pen. This is a what?
Will you give it to the people behind you so they can get in on this?
This is a pen.
This is a what?
This is a pen.
This is a pen.
This is a what?
This is a pen.
This is a pen. This is a what? This is a pen. This is a pen.
This is what? Give it to the person behind you.
Behind.
We'll zigzag back and forth.
This is a what? This is a ball pen.
This is a pen. This is a what?
This is a pen.
This is a what?
This is a what?
This is a pen.
Good, yeah.
This is a pen.
This is a what?
This is a pen.
Oh, you have to give it. You have to take it and then pass it to.
Okay.
Yes, pass it to him.
This is a what?
It's a pen.
Give it to. Give it back and forth. Make sure you exchange it. You take it and then you give it to him, and say, "This is a pen." So you've exchanged it twice. The person that's giving it gives it twice.
This is a pen. This is a what? This is a pen.
Good.
This is a pen.
This is a what?
This is a pen.
This is a pen. This is a pen.
Can you give it to them back there?
This is a what? This is a pen.
What?
This is a pen.
This is what?
Wait, you've done it already, haven't you? Good. Okay, thanks. Now, we'll start with you this next time, or I'll start it with you. Now, we're going to add feelings to it. There are really four basic feelings. Everything else is colored. It's colored by these feelings. And these feelings can come, I believe, and all be based in love, actually. That love can be anger, love can be fear, love can be joy, and love can be sadness. So since we're permitted to love, we're definitely permitted to have all these feelings. Now, it used to be a theory in acting, and it's still held to by a lot of people, that you have to get really serious about feelings and go back into your past and think about a time when you had that feeling and then try to recapture that feeling. And that takes so maybe 20 minutes, maybe 2 hours to get into. Television actors have discovered that, in fact, that is not the case. We all have feelings running through us all the time. And as we grow older, our potential to feel increases rather than decreases because we have more experiences from which to draw those feelings. So, consequently, we can cry, laugh, get mad, shout, scream, or be terribly frightened in a matter of minutes. And just to demonstrate, in less than a minute, just to demonstrate this, I'm going to count to 20. And in 20 minutes, and in 20 counts, I will show you all four feelings. I will share all four feelings with you. 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 16, 17, 18, 19, 20. You can do it too. Now you have the lines. You've all run over the lines to this. This is a pen. Same exchange with your neighbor as we did before. Only this time, you take a feeling and you say those very same things with a feeling of some sort or another. And I'm going to start the feeling. To demonstrate, we're doing a lot of things at once in this exercise, and normally we'd take it in pieces, but we want to cover a lot of ground in a short amount of time tonight. So, instead of just taking one feeling and passing it on, we're going to take a lot of them. But I want you to see how contagious feelings can be. So, I want you to take the feeling of the person that gives you the pen and project it to the next person unless I change it. And I'll say a different feeling, then you can change to that feeling. And then when we get halfway around, I'm going to let you make the choices. But the first half of people that go around are going to kind of give us a little model of the range of feelings that we can show. Okay? And I promised I was going to start back here, and I'm going to start back here. Here. This.
This is a what?
This is a pen!
Keep it going. Anger.
This is a pen.
This is a what?
A pen. A pen.
This is a pen.
This is a what?
This is a pen.
This is a pen. This is a what? This is a pen. This is a pen. This is a what? This is a pen. I'm scared.
This is a pen.
This is a what?
It's a pen.
This is a pen.
This is a what?
It's a pen.
This is a pen.
Don't drop it.
It's a pen.
It's okay. Keep going.
This is a pen.
This is a pen.
What?
This is a pen. Oh, I did. This is a pen.
Joy. Really happy. This pen's worth a couple million dollars.
This is a pen.
What?
This is a pen.
This is a pen.
This is a what?
This is a pen.
Okay, over there, Francis, over there. Okay, scared. Now you can choose any feeling you want to and march right over there to the fellow sitting next to the young lady with the pink that started it. Any feeling you want.
This is a pen.
What?
A pen.
This is a pen.
Oh, what's the feeling? What's the feeling?
Mad.
Mad, madder then. Be madder.
This is a pen.
What?
A pen!
This is a pen!
Oh! A what?
Can't you understand? This is a pen.
This is a pen.
What? This is a what?
It's a pen.
This is a pen.
This is what?
This is a pen.
This is a pen. This is a pen.
This is a what?
This is a pen.
This is a pen.
This is a what?
This is a pen.
This is a pen.
What?
What's the feeling? What's the feeling? Mm-hmm. Wait, wait. No, your feeling. What? Bigger, bigger, more.
Can I respond?
Yeah.
To his. This is a what?
Yeah.
This is a pen with a gold filler, a platinum ball, used by President Reagan to sign his finding on the Marine Country.
What? Okay, is that it? Okay. Well, thanks. Give yourself a hand. Had an opportunity.
This is not a pen, this is an oven.
We've endowed that pen. That pen is, will no longer be just a pen. We're going to pass the story around. And I'd like to know if somebody's come tonight with a story they'd like to celebrate. I know there's one person here who has one for us. And I'll call on that person if they don't volunteer. Okay, I'll volunteer you. Do you have you got your legend ready?
You got the legend.
Oh, okay.
Tell us your name too, because
okay,
a lot of us.
Way.
Why don't you sit over here in my chair? Because there's people behind you, and everyone should actually see the person who's telling the story. And who wants to tell after Wanda? Come on. Think about it. We've got some stories. I know there's some people who promised me they have stories to tell me tonight. Think of the onion and how generous the onion was. I know there's some people who didn't have a chance yesterday who are here today, and I'm going to ask all of you to tell and share the experience of yesterday with our brothers and sisters who come today.
6,000 years ago, in the state of what's now the state of Oregon, was Mount Mazama. And beneath it, in the Klamath Valley, where the Klamath River flowed, the Klamath Indian lived. And it was an ideal place for them to live because they had their hunting close by and their fishing and good land for them to raise their crops on. And it was just a really nice place for them to live. Well, the Indians believed that the god above ground lived on top of Mount Shasta, and his name was Skell. And the Indians believed that their god below ground lived inside the mountain called Mount Mazama, and he was the evil god. Well, one day, I meant to tell you that the evil god's name was Lao. One day, Lao came down from the mountain and walked among the lands where the Klamath Indian lived, and he caught sight of the Indian princess. And she was really beautiful, and she was out wandering with the deer and singing to the birds. And he immediately fell in love with her. So he approached her and he asked her to marry him, and promised her that if she came to live with him beneath the mountain, that she would live forever and be herald a princess and have all the luxuries that his life below the ground provided. Well, the princess wasn't impressed with this. She wasn't impressed with Lao, and she didn't like the idea of living beneath the ground when she loved the earth so much. So she told him no. Lao got real mad, and he went back to the mountain and he started fuming and steaming. And then pretty soon he was throwing fireballs everywhere. And soon after that, as his anger grew, lava was flowing from the mountain and rocks were falling, and it was threatening the livelihood of the Klamath Indian. So they didn't know what to do. The Indian people decided that they would call upon the above ground god Skell for some help. Well, they went to Skell, and Skell decided that the best way to approach the problem would be to call upon the god of the north wind. So he called upon the god of the north wind, and they set out to battle Lao by causing great cold north winds to blow, and snow and ice and rain, and hoping to put the fires out. Well, in the spring, that happened. The Lao decided to give up and went back down inside his mountain and went quiet. Well, Skell, thinking that all was well, was sleeping in his lodge on Mount Shasta when Lao decided that he was going to raise up and kill Skell. So he raised up with one humongous explosion and threw it on Skell's lodge and killed him. Well, Indian legend had it that they believed that the gods weren't really dead unless they took the heart. So Lao sent his men, and they went and took the heart of Skell and brought it back to Mount Mazama and kept it guarded underground. Well, at this point, the sky turned dark because Skell, the above sky god, was dead. And Lao decided to take more revenge on the Klamath Indian people by spewing more smoke and ash. It was threatening their livelihood. They couldn't hunt, they couldn't fish, and the lava was covering their land. So they went and retreated. Well, the Klamath Indians didn't know what to do about it, and the chief, whose name shall not be spoken, decided to call upon his three wise men. The three wise men got together and they decided that maybe they could quiet Lao by making some other concession. Maybe he would be happy with another Indian maiden or something. So the three set out to climb the mountain and they never came back. Well, at this point the princess was beginning to feel really bad, and she decided maybe in order to quiet the mountain down and keep Lao at bay, she better marry him. And at this point the animals intervened and they said, wait a minute, before you do that, let us try. So they concocted a great plot. The bear and the deer and the elk and the rabbit and the eagle decided that they would get the heart of Skell from Lao's guards and return it to Skell's body so that Skell could come to life again. So they made it into the mountain, and the bear wrestled with the guards while the rabbit stole the heart, ran out of the mountain, gave it to the elk. The elk ran as far as he could till he met the deer. The deer took the heart and ran as far as she could, and then the eagle swooped down, took the heart from the deer, and took it over to, swiftly flew over to Mount Shasta and restored the heart to Skell. Skell came back to life, and he was mad. He decided he was going to go over to Lao's mountain and kill him. So he did. He went over there, and there was a great battle. I mean, they were fighting and fuming and throwing rocks everywhere at each other, and soon it got so bad that the whole mountain just caved in. Skell killed Lao, and he tricked the crayfish that lived beneath the ground into thinking that he was Lao and that he had a great feast for them, which was the body of Skell. So he begins taking apart, Skell begins taking apart Lao's body and throwing it to the crayfish, and the crayfish devoured it. Well, he saved the best part for last. That was Lao's head, and he threw that in, and when the crayfish realized that they had been eating their master, they retreated beneath the ground. And to this very day, the north wind filled up the crater with water, and to this very day, the skull of Lao is Wizard Island. Wizard Island. Yeah.
What a story for Crater Lake to come out of Crater Lake.
That's what the Klamath Indians believed happened, and it was passed on to the Modoc Indians, which followed the Klamath.
In Minnesota, where I come from, up on Lake Superior, the island of Isle Royal, which is, somebody told a great story the other night about an experience on Isle Royal, is said to be the sleeping Nana Bojo, the great trickster of the Ojibwa people. The natural monuments are for superhuman heroes, you know, mythical people. I can't really even call them people. Mythical forces in the lives of a certain group of people. And who knows? I mean, after all.
Because of the story of Lao and Skell, the Indians in the area stayed away from Crater Lake.
Mm-hmm.
Now they so firmly avoided the area, they didn't tell the white men about it. It was not until relatively late in time the white men accidentally stumbled on Crater Lake and found that it was indeed there.
Isn't that interesting?
Mm-hmm. The Indians don't like to tell their stories, their legends and stuff. But this legend was given to a man, I can't remember his name, that wrote Blue Enchantment, and he put this Indian legend in there. And this was in 1937 when he found out. There's several different versions to it, but I thought that this was the most romantic.
Uh-huh. Oh, it's a good story. It's a very good story. Indians out here not like to tell the stories in the summertime? That seems to be the case with the Ojibwa Indians. That is the case with the Ojibwa Indians in Minnesota, because they believe that the manitos, the spirits, will hear them in the summer. They live in the animals that are awake in the summertime. And then if they hear the stories, they will have power. They'll have the power of the story. And that could be unsafe. There's a tremendous respect for the stories in the Indian traditions. Has anyone ever had a miraculous experience out in the wilderness? Here?
Yeah, but it took 40 years.
Well, tell me about it. What are you saying? 40 years to get here?
I was referring to the trek from Egypt.
Ah, yeah. That's right. That's right. Well, there's a lot of ways to understand wilderness, too. Wilderness is a very rich image when you start to think about it. I recall a night of camping on the ocean shores outside of on the Olympic Peninsula, on the outside of the Pacific side of the Olympic Peninsula, with some friends, four friends, and we'd made a big bonfire and we sat around and talked. Everybody else wanted to go to sleep except me. I was wide awake. So I looked down and there was the ocean before me. The waves breaking in. You know how phosphorescent the waves are at night? And I was so fascinated. I couldn't resist. I was just drawn down to the waves. And then I started having these fantasies of that boy who got on the white horse and rode into the ocean. Remember that that movie? And I thought, what would it be like? What a wonderful way to die. And we would just go out into the ocean and become part of Mother Ocean again. I wasn't really wanting to die, but I thought, if I were going to die, that would be a wonderful way to go. And so I was just playing with the waves, and I was running in and out of the waves, and I was having such a good time. And then all of a sudden I realized that it was kind of late and I was a little tired and I was also getting kind of wet and I was getting kind of cold. So I decided I'd go back and get into my sleeping bag. And I turned around to head toward our campfire and I saw that the shoreline was lined with campfires. I didn't know which one was ours. Well, I tried to find the right campfire, but I couldn't find the right campfire. So I ended up quietly sneaking up on some people who were sound asleep by a campfire, and I dug myself into the sand, but it was somewhat warmer by the fire, and covered myself with sand because by now I was freezing cold. And I lay there. Fortunately, I was very tired by this time, and I did fall asleep. And I woke up at the crack of dawn, quickly, before these people woke, to find me lying there by their fire. And I started running down the beach. A couple, a Norwegian couple, as it turned out, were coming down to clam, to get clam. And I said, can you tell me, I remember that there was a road that we had taken to get to our campsite. Which way is this road? Is it that way? Is it to the right or to the left? And they said, oh, it's down to the left. So I ran toward the left. And I was running along when I saw my friends who were standing up kind of wildly looking around. Everywhere, up in the air and down in the ground, everywhere. And they saw me coming toward them. And there was this look of horror on their faces, like they had seen some awful sight. And then they were smiling and relieved and said, we're so glad you're back. The police were the next step. And they said, here, let's take you up to this cafe. So we went to a nearby cafe and went in to dry myself off and comb my hair. And I looked in the mirror and I was caked. Just kidding. I'm all. So that's my story from the wilderness.
I think about those people that you were near and what their story would be about.
Yeah,
that morning.
If they had waked and found me there. Yeah.
What would have been your first words?
I don't know. I mean, I probably would have said, I'm so sorry, but I'm lost at sea.
A great sandwich.
That's right. I'm a great sandwich.
I guess the only thing I can think of in wilderness is I took some explorer scouts up on the wilderness trails of northern Minnesota, starting at Ely. And we just took a 10-day trip back and up into Canada. And I can remember coming back after reaching the farthest point and then circling around coming back, and I came into this place called Bailey Bay. And we came through Beaver Creek, a brief beaver streams, and we didn't know where we were. the guide knew where we were. It was good. And anyway, we finally end up in this lake, and it's a big lake, one small bay. And we come out, and here's some girls over camped here, you know, and all these 14, 15-year-old boys say, ooh. And and I suppose I got it. Anyway, the guy took us right by them and way across the bay. Could hardly even see where they were. And when we were over there, it got dark. And this one kid had a flashlight. And he just went like this, bling, bling. All of a sudden, bling, bling, bling. Another light came across. It was just black. And so the other one says, let's go. And so I said, you know, as a so-called leader, I thought, boy, oh boy, I wonder how I would get across that body of water. There was no moon, pitch black. And I was still smoking in those days. And I was out. Gee, I wonder if they'd have any cigarettes. Well, okay, but now let's keep close in here, you know, because it was calm water. So we started out in general direction, and we used lights, and we flash over there, and not anymore, it's cold, but just blink, blink. And pretty soon, lights come back, and we get closer and closer, and we holler and nothing, and holler, and finally we hear them hollering to us, and pretty soon we could tell they were getting closer to us. So we met. They came out partway and we came out partway. And then we turned around and they had campfires, so we headed back towards the campfire. But I thought that was kind of miraculous, that in pitch darkness. By the way, they didn't have any cigarettes. in pitch darkness, we could make contact like this and then survive.
It is amazing. We were talking about that with babies, that some people think that babies can see magnetic fields or have that sense that we lose as we get older, because we deny certain things. We're told, oh, that's nonsense, so we don't take certain things seriously. But at certain times, especially at times of peril, these abilities come back to us.
I still think that was a foolish thing for me to allow it to happen.
I don't know. I think it makes such a good story. Really good. Well, is it 7 o'clock? What time is it? 10-2? Oh, we've got a lot of time. Let's keep going. You didn't have a chance to tell yesterday.
I didn't know what I would tell, but I told you, you know, sometimes the spirit moves. But you were talking about love earlier. And I think it's really important for us to tell people that we love them. Very often we expect that our children should just know by the way that we treat them and the things that we do for them, or our spouses should know that we love them. And I think this was very became
me.
this became evident to me because my father was a big strong man who did not really know how to verbalize his feelings, and I guess all the time I was growing up, I knew that he loved us. At the time that I was of an age where I wanted ice skates and bicycles, it was wartime, and bicycles and ice skates were not as available as they are now. And my dad was a truck driver, and every day he drove from our town in southern Minnesota to St. Paul, which was 100 miles away, and brought back, he drove a truck that hauled beer. And he, every morning, 4 o'clock, took this load of empties to St. Paul and came back with a load of beer. And sometime during those trips, he managed to locate a shop in St. Paul where he bought me a pair of used ice skates. And for some reason that I really don't know right now, he wasn't able to just go into the store and get them, but he knew that on a particular day he would be able to get those skates and bring them to me. And we didn't have a car, and so I knew when he would be coming home from work, and I can remember running that half block to the corner, I don't know how many times, to see if he was coming with the ice skates. And I think that was, an example that he did love me. The same thing happened with the bicycle. Bicycles were not available, but he located a bicycle shop where they used parts from all different kinds of bicycles and put together a bicycle for me. And I can remember the day that I was to get that bicycle, and I was to meet him where he worked, and I remember running there. And I wonder now, what his feeling was. He must have been watching for me to come running to get this bicycle. Well, a lot of years passed, and my parents retired and moved to Florida. And when I was 42 years old, my dad became very seriously ill and needed surgery. And he was sure that he was going to die, and he wanted to see all of us. And so two of my sisters went to Florida to be with him at the time that he had the surgery. And a week later, another sister and myself went down. And by this time, he was recovering, and we stayed a week. And the day before we were to leave, he was able to get up and walk around his room.
and he walked to the door of his hospital room. He said, "I love you." And I never will forget that. And I think, you know, I wish that I had not had to wait for 42 years to do that. I just think it's important that we stay there. Do people right along, our children, or to other people.
Thank you for sharing that story with us. It's a beautiful story. One of the things that occurred to me as you were telling it, one question I'd like to ask the rest of you, how do you know you're loved? What are some of the signs of love?
I think that in our case, we feel comfortable with each other. I think I can goof around and say all kinds of things, and we still know that we love each other. It's hard to put into words. You know, you can say, "I love you," and you know that.
That's true, but it's more than that. It's more than that. It's all kinds of things. All kinds of things. And that's wonderful. That's wonderful. Those are stories. Those are stories. That's what the onion is. The onion is a love story. And so are you, each of you. A lot of them. A lot of love stories. So keep on telling your stories. Generate that energy. Share. Surrender your stories to us so we can tell them too. Thank you very much.